It turns out that the untucked shirt, unshaved face, fluorescent hair dye crowd wants to change the world.
How do you continue?
At a hip West Village spot on the NYU campus last week, I entered an arcade where joysticks were at the service of economic and political yardsticks, where role-playing was more about the common good than uncommon magic and wizardry. Welcome to the Games for Change Conference, where race cars, starfighters, and commandos are replaced by games about philosophy and political deception, where gamers can explore the afterlife or pilot an unmanned drone.
All right, so, okay, it is true that I suck at this, but let's...
It's not about winning or losing or escaping into a fantasy world. Instead, through playing a game, it's about learning some things about the real world. Take this game, Unmanned. You get to control an advanced unmanned predator drone. But what makes the game memorable is taking on the qualities of life of a person whose job it is to make war by remote control. 21st century warfare is not that exciting, and that's the point.
All right, getting up in the morning, going into work. So I'm going to work is the deal. We just passed you the coordinates of a person of interest. All right, so I can blow this person away. I'm to follow and not engage. We lost him. Oh, that was my fault. So it's all about the really incredibly boring life of being a drone pilot.
Using gaming to convey unvarnished realism, says Unmanned's creator Paolo Pedercini from Mole Industria, does not involve using fancy graphics.
I don't think in mainstream game you've seen so far a really realistic depiction of that kind of warfare. There are some things in, Call of Duty that are sort of reminiscent of that, but you will never find that.
Of course, my job is blowing people away, but I'm having a very boring conversation with my wife.
And that's exactly what came across. A soldier chillingly detached from the enemy, fighting targets, not people. That's modern warfare.
The kind of like the mental state you have, playing at distance, without risk, kind of like in this kind of sandbox, almost like environment in which nothing can possibly happen to you. That's also kind of like similar to video games.
There's a game for every global challenge, like how about a video game to teach people in the developing world about proper sanitation or about the spread of sexually transmitted disease.
I think games offer a potential addition, not necessarily a solution, but a way to supplement the work that people are already doing.
That's Virginia Zahnbrecher, Senior Development Officer at Relief International and co-chair of the Gaming Working Group at NetHope.
They're also much more engaging. And for some topics in countries where it's taboo to talk about sexually transmitted diseases, games offer a much more anonymous interface to convey that information.
In this game, the idea of detachment is an aid to get people to put aside their moral inhibitions about sex. There are other surprising advantages to the game platform. In places where cell phones have come to dominate family life, games can have a huge impact in raising awareness.
You know, my average client is going to be a woman who shares a cell phone with five other members of her family that has just a basic 123 number pad, no color, limited access to the actual network, and is charged on a car battery in the market 2 kilometers away. It's a hurdle. It also offers an opportunity because, again, there's so little media in that woman's life that it's easy to move to the forefront of, you know, what she's thinking about or her list of things she wants to do just by putting a game on the phone that has that power.
Of course, the original social change concept for games has always been education. The hit commercial games Portal and Portal 2. The idea is simple. You may have seen it. You have a gun that can shoot out 2 portals, both connected to each other. Walk through one, come out the other end. Jump through one, catapult through the other end, which is a perfect metaphor for quantum physics. Portal's developer Valve heard this directly from physics teachers, and even more surprisingly, from teachers of literature.
We had all these examples of, hey, I'm using Portal in my classroom. I've written an English literacy lesson plan around the story.
That's Leslie Redd, Director of Educational Programs at Valve.
We just heard of another one about the use of sarcasm in the games.
Sorry about the mess. I've really let the place go since you killed me. By the way, thanks for that.
Sarcasm self-test complete.
Oh, good. That's back online.
we kept hearing all these really interesting stories about how it was being used.
So Valve decided to turn teachers into developers and set up a site called teachwithportals.com. It's a learn-by-doing strategy, says Valve designer Yasser Malaika, that literally saves some eggs from some of the traditional old experiments, like that egg drop to demonstrate basic physics.
I can totally imagine one teacher deciding, okay, we're going to do the egg drop the traditional way, but we're going to explore thermodynamics using this game system.
Games are a tool like anything else. You know, a pencil is a tool, a laptop is a tool. It's how it's used.
But more than anything, there was a great sense from all the people we talked with at the Games for Change conference that they're looking for ways to get gamers off the couch, out from behind the screen, no longer passively playing, but actively learning how to engage in real-world problem solving. Again, Valve Education Director Leslie Redd.
The consumer becomes the producer and the creator. And in being able to have the tools to create something new and be innovative and creative, that is what we need to teach kids. That's what they need to know how to do.
Of course, there were some real whiz kids here, too.
So these flashing lights on your head, that's a sign of brain activity?
It is. It's a sign of... This headset is ready to go, and it's sensing brain activity, and it will send it to the computer.
Arlene Ducau is a research assistant at the MIT Media Lab and principal and co-founder of DuCode Studio. Her fancy headset makes the mind into a controller. Brain activity over here moves a flock of creatures and lights over here. Think again, and all those creatures scurry to your hands, on the screen anyway.
It's better for one's health, one's mental health, one's physical health, if you find ways to connect to reality.
It's a critical moment for these gamers. How can video games become an important tool for social change? One of the key words we heard often, Arlene Ducau.
Teach empathy. How do we teach sympathy? Those kinds of immersive gaming settings allow us to teach those lessons in a much clearer way.
It's something that's a little counterintuitive because it's a digital media that's often played without anybody else around.
That's Virginia Zombrecker again from Relief International.
And the idea that you can develop a sense of empathy from interacting with a machine, I think, is kind of interesting.
Designer Paolo Pettercini said the game he's playing right now, Cart Life, has that very simple concept in mind.
Then you are basically a pushcart vendor in the street, like a working class woman or like a single mom struggling with budget. And I think that's a very bold choice.
If you can feel like someone struggling with a problem that you never thought about before, that's the victory. The most coveted power in these games and the win for these gamers is empathy. Again, Valve's Yasser Malaika.
And a lot of us who are gamers know that when you go online, there's so much, you know, abuse that goes on. What if we could address that in schools? What if kids could see the consequences of that kind of behavior in a way that they can't on the online world?
What is the power and potential of video games? What's the most important lesson you ever learned from a video game? What could they be teaching? Give us a call at 877-8MYTAKE.